I had this core wound of unlovability. And when I unlocked that and shifted that radically, everything else unlocked for me, including the shifts in my business and things like that. It has come to feel like if life force was running through you all the time.
Welcome to the Unstoppable Woman podcast, where we explore what it means to create a truly exquisite life. I'm your host, Amira Alvarez, inviting you to be part of these intimate conversations about feminine ambition, what lies beyond traditional notions of success, and how to answer the question, what's next when you've already achieved so much? Let's dive in.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Unstoppable Woman podcast. I'm Amira Alvarez. I am the founder and CEO of the Unstoppable Woman, and I'm super excited to bring to you another fabulous interview. It's going to be so good. We're going to be talking about golden handcuffs, stories of failure, how to really manage your energy, and so much more with my guest today. Her name is Steph Ziv, and she's written an amazing book called The Choice is Yours, which I'm really intrigued to learn more about and to discuss all these topics. So Steph, please, welcome to the call. Welcome to the episode. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to my world. And why don't you tell the audience a little bit about you? I know you have a really interesting backstory and background. So if you could contextualize, you know, what your journey has been to the success that you've had, I think that would be a great place for us to start.
I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity. And I am very intrigued and excited about the unstoppable woman and how we access that within each of us and also with your audience. So my story is, you know, I started as a camp counselor, which I think is an important part of my experience because I think it's actually what led me to be the coach that I am today. But in between being a camp counselor and actually also being the assistant director of my summer camp that I went to for 14 years, I was only the assistant director for 2 years. I started when I was 10 going to the camp, and I was there until I was 24. And then I left that job. I've had many pivots in my world. So I left that job. And then my real dream was always to be Phil Donahue, which I know totally dates me, but you know,
I'm right there with you. I remember that. Those were the 80s, you know?
Yeah. It was the best, right? He ran up and down the aisles and he had really intriguing guests and he was very inquisitive and I just loved him. And then of course he married my other childhood hero, which is Marlo Thomas from Free to Be You and Me. So I always think of myself as their love child, even though I have no relationship with them outside of my own love. So after I left the camp situation, I traveled aimlessly across the country and landed in Los Angeles where I had one friend. And that one friend eventually did help me get into the entertainment industry where I was a production assistant. So I started as a production assistant when I was 25 years old. And then I ended up working with these guys who wrote the Santa Claus and Space Jam, if you all remember those movies. And I was their assistant. And then eventually I was their director of development and we had a deal at DreamWorks. And then it got to a point where kind of, you know, that inner voice continues to say, well, you haven't really done the Phil Donahue thing yet, you know? And so I ended up going, while I was living in Los Angeles, I found this school called the University of Santa Monica, which was actually a master's in spiritual psychology, which was an amazing program. And the essence of that program, quite frankly, was that if we are souls having a human experience, what are we here to learn? And then so it was a really deep dive into, I think, expanding, strengthening, growing my EQ so that I had language around some of that, you know, some of those real growth minded ways of being and then what we can create from there. And I really loved it. And then lifed again. And so I did 1 year of that program. And then I moved to New York, which was also the place where I always saw myself. And that's where I say my soul was born here. And I moved here in July of 2001. So 2 months before the world changed. And I stayed. And so I'm a 23-year New Yorker at this point. I ended up, you know, obviously the world was flattened after 9/11, and I had no job and no money and no nothing. And eventually I actually did get a job working as an executive, as a director of development at Oxygen, at the Oxygen Network, when it was still owned, when Oprah was still a partner. And after a year I was there, I was promoted to a vice president. And then a few years in, I thought, you know, I don't really see myself moving past that title and that job, because I was still very rooted in my team and I still got to be creative and I still got to really have fun. And then the next level up sounded awful to me. It was budgets and lots of like real business things that I didn't really love. And so all throughout 2007, I was getting certified as a coach on the side. And I really didn't even know what that meant. The truth is that I was up for a really big job at NBC quietly, and I ended up going to a career counselor, which is different than a coach. But I went to this career counselor to get my resume in order and all the things. And halfway through my work with her that I paid for, the job went away. It moved back to LA, which I was very clear I was not moving back to LA. So I said to her, you know, if I could do anything, I would facilitate personal development workshops. And she said, well, why don't you be a coach? And I go, I don't know what that is. She said, a life coach. I said, I don't know what that is. So cut to within a few weeks, I was in a coaching program getting certified as a coach. And then what ended up happening was on November 12th of 07, I was certified as a coach. And on November 28th of 07, I was let go with a severance from Oxygen. And thus began my very wonky journey to this moment.
Okay, that is a great, great, great story. So there's a few things that I want to touch on then there. And then I want to get the what happened after, because I know that that's where things get even a little bit more exciting. So I think it's really interesting that you have two touch points with Phil Donahue and Oprah. Right. Oprah owned the Oxygen Network. That's where you landed. You had this desire to be Phil Donahue. They were such pivotal people in that world in the 80s. I mean, Oprah still, right? In her own evolution. Do you think there's any connection for you between your desire to be Phil Donahue and or your version of Phil Donahue and you working at the Oxygen Network?
Do I think there's any link? Is that what you're asking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what was interesting is that when I came into Oxygen, it was still very much aligned with personal growth. Like, I don't know, you know, Carolyn Mace, who's a medical intuitive and was really big during that time. You know, she was on Oprah in the 80s in the 90s probably, but she had a show on Oxygen. Cheryl Richardson had a show on Oxygen, who was also kind of an OG life coach back then. Mm-hmm. And they were really in that space, which didn't last because unfortunately, you know, the world changed. And then we ended up doing, I told the story recently where we ended up buying a show called The Bad Girls Club, which was essentially taking all of the quote bad girls from the show Real World and putting them in a house together. And then we were suddenly to me, it was very anti-woman. And I kept saying to people, like, what are we doing? Like, this is the demise of our society. Why are we doing this? And they were like, you're not allowed in these notes meetings anymore. They kicked me out of the meetings. But to your point about, is there any, you know, kind of divine magnetism to what I called in? I mean, maybe I did meet Oprah. Oprah actually left Oxygen kind of as a part owner after I got there. But I do feel like the essence of what they both did and do was absolutely the essence of what I do, you know, and who I am. And so I feel like attracts like, and energy calls it in. And so absolutely, I feel like, you know, and then to be honest, you know, the other part of my story is I'll tell this part later, but I did have a moment to kind of maybe not be Phil, but to be on television. So I can talk about that.
Yeah, go ahead and share that now. I think
the other part of the story. So what happened when I left Oxygen is, you know, in my coaching, you know, where I got certified, my teacher was like, oh yeah, they were like, I left my company and I immediately had 20 clients. And I was like, well, I have 2,500 people in my Rolodex. I'm really dating myself, but like I have 2,500 contacts. I'll easily get 20 people for my, you know, to be my clients. And that was not the case. That did not occur for me.
And what do you think that is? Okay. Because people have very different experiences. I've coached, this is not who I'm coaching now, but I've coached a lot of women on, you know, starting businesses, and some go gangbusters and they can tap right in with a few guidance points. And some are much more challenged by those first initial years and transitioning to getting clients. So why do you think you had a harder time than an easier time?
Well, let's say I failed. I mean, we don't even have to sugarcoat it. It was a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you exactly what it is. There's a few points. One is, I literally did not have any tools outside of my desire to serve. And in my experience with women, everyone's like, I just want to help people. I just want to serve. I'm like, you not getting money is not helping anybody, right? You not being paid for the value that you bring is a disservice to yourself and others, right? I did not have I have a very simple revenue stream document now that I did not have when I started. So I did not have a business plan. I did not have an understanding of my price points and how many clients I would need in order to sustain, yearly income XYZ. So that's the first thing. Now I'm like, I was at a restaurant the other night and asked the waitress I was like, do you have a pen and paper? I need to coach these two people right now because I am upset that they didn't get a job actually because the company said you undervalued yourself and we are not saying yes because of it, which I was like,
hallelujah.
Extraordinary. Exactly. Yeah. But so I sat there and did a whole revenue stream document with them. What do you need to make? What is your unit cost? How many do you need? What percentage of the business is it? Like real hardcore, just numbers, but not overwhelming. That was
so I feel like there's simple math that needs to be done. Right.
Correct.
And it's not complicated. People go into a lot of confusion around it because it's emotional, but it's not complicated math. But now, you know, I was just talking to a good friend of mine who's an established business owner. She's started multiple businesses. They're both multi-million dollar businesses. They are in a totally different industry than coaching. They're in home goods and sales of a service related to home goods. And I just say that to give context, not coaching, okay? And what she wants to start next is facilitating some coaching. And she was approaching creating her coaching program from a very, this is what I want to make, this kind of way, which someone else had shared that strategy, which I think is a good strategy until it's not a good strategy. That's a good strategy for someone who doesn't have a lot of structure or that masculine definition, that masculine edge where you need to put some structure and focus on it. But if you are someone who leans too far, heavy on that side of things, what she really needed to do was like, is this going to make you happy? Like, is this going to light you up? Are you going to be able to sell this? Like, is this an emotional yes for you? And what would be a true communication of your essence, your truth? And it didn't take her long. We were both on the same flight. So she did it in flight and shared it with me in a couple conversations afterwards. And within a couple hours, she had absolute clarity around both the financial structures and the this is a yes. Because what I find is that if you don't have the alignment on the yes for you, what's true for you, what will light you up, you're still fitting yourself into someone else's box. And that doesn't sell. Okay. It never has, never will. It's an employee mindset in your own business. And so I think you need both. And it sort of depends on where you are in your your business journey and where you are in your sort of that masculine feminine energy balance as well.
I think for me though, I really was coming from an employee. I was an employee. I never had a business. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that I wanted to serve, right? Mm-hmm. I already knew what lit me up. I just didn't know how to monetize it. And I would say the other thing that caused me great failure was that I am a perfectionist, you know, and I describe it like, you know, as I was very much, I had a severance, right? So I had a little cushion when I left. But what I would say is I kind of at one point, just like I was sitting on the sofa with my new best friends, Ben and Jerry, you know, watching Sex and the City reruns and gaining 15 pounds and paralyzed in my perfection that was keeping me procrastinating from even just putting myself out in the world. And I had a thought of like, well, I need all my systems in place and I need my branding to be perfect and I need my website and I need all these things. And while I was very busy in that, my, you know, sticking true to the perfection and not moving and having that paralysis, I was watching other people in my new industry who were really soaring past me in what I like to lovingly call their, you know, fearless in their mediocrity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I realized like, yes, I was not a multi-million dollar company at that point to know what I was doing. I did not know what I was doing. And I also think that, you know, if you've ever read the book, The Big Leap, do you know that book?
Yeah, it's a great
Hendrick's
book.
Great book. Yeah. And the essence of it is that there's an upper limit problem, right? And that we all have this set thermostat. And if we go beyond it, our unconscious saboteurs come and knock us back down where the thermostat is, because that's comfortable, right?
100%.
Like, and we have that, I think, as women with weight, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of ways that we can feel that. And as try as we may, there is a point where like our body doesn't want to go under a certain weight. It's happy to go over, in my experience.
Yeah. Well, I think for me with weight, I think there's an upper limit and a lower limit both. And, you know, I'll go up and then I'll hit an upper limit and I'll be like, this, no, we don't go beyond this. And I have a lower limit too, right? Even though at times I think, I'd like my lower limit to be lower. Yeah, we have this set point, this range right. That we stay within. And for some people, it's a wider range than a lower range, but I think there is a range. We have that oftentimes with cash flow or with peace,
yeah.
Or with like the ability to receive love, all these places. Hey there, I just want to take a quick moment and ask, what's the thing holding you back from your own success? The hidden shadow or saboteur potentially at play for you. And do you know how to find it? We often have that one thing keeping us from our next level. And it's not always the strategic move. It's often the internal one. I found in my own journey of success in building my exquisite life, it's what I call a core wound or loyalty pack. What's that? I share more at theunstoppablewoman.com, right on the homepage. Find out more at theunstoppablewoman.com. Now, let's get back to our episode. You were asking me a little bit about my story, and I wanted, I think now is a good time to sort of interject a little bit about this, because when I started, I had a similar, this was many, 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 many years ago. I had a similar experience where I spent 6 months like effing around with my website. Like, I need my website to be great before I could launch anything. And now I would coach someone radically differently on that. You know, I've had people create websites in 3 hours because I'm like, no, you just go here and you do this and you do this and you do this, right? Like, just go. But I was in that same, you know, fear of putting myself out there, procrastination, needing to be perfect, all of that. And what happened for me was pretty much 3 years of working like an employee in my own business on all the itsy bitsy teeny tiny little tasks and the never ending to-do lists and just going hard. My first year in business, I made 30K. My second year in business, I made 90K. I tripled my income. It felt good, right? My third year in business, I crossed the six figure mark and I made 138, which was great, right? I felt, well, no, that would be a lie. I didn't feel great about it. I felt great about crossing the six-figure mark, but I didn't feel like I had arrived. And quite frankly, I had a big wake-up moment where I missed dinner with my then husband, and he was totally chill and cool about it. But I was like, I had just said, like, I'll be right down, baby. I just want to finish one thing. And it was an hour later that I stopped working because I was so like addicted to getting one last thing done and the perfectionism. And I was like, there's got to be a better way. Like, Oprah can't do this. Like, right. Beyonce can't do this. Richard Branson can't do this. Sarah Blakely can't have built their business like this. Like, I know that you have to put the effort in. I know that you have to put the work in. I got that message, but there's got to be another way. And that fourth year in business, right? Because the next year after making 138, I studied success and I studied universal law, the natural laws of success. I studied other successful people. I got a mentor. I went deep into what it meant to think accurately and to move beyond these subconscious programs that keep us at set points. Mm. And I did a huge deep dive, and I went from making 138K a year to making 700K in 1 year, five times my income, blew my mind.
Wow.
But, and this is pertinent to the story, I cried at the end of the year because my goal had been to make $1 million, and I didn't. I missed the goal. Like, no reference, like no awareness, right? And I woke up to that. It didn't take me too long to wake up to, like, you still had done an incredible thing. But that was a pattern of setting goals, not quite making them, making sure that I was disappointed, never enough. Let's set the next goal. Let's keep going. Built a multi-million dollar business this way, okay? And that business revolved around helping people fairly new in business, the under six figures to, you know, I've made 250, 300, 350, that range in business. How do I scale? How do I leverage? And I would really do it with a combination of the tactical, like, here's how to look at your numbers, here's what to do kind of thing, and this psychological perspective on, you know, how you move beyond your limiting beliefs and how to use universal law to think accurately. Huge success. People did amazing things. It was fabulous. I got to be an incredible coach over those years. I would flip my hair back and say I was a master level coach. My clients had huge quantum leaps. They did great. It was very fulfilling until it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Until I realized that I was back in the grind. And I was putting the kind of effort into something to make it work. I was using that push effort, that grind effort, which, granted, you need some of to get the momentum going in a business. But if you stay there after a period of time, that's putting good energy after bad, right? Or, I mean, that might not be the right expression, but it's not the way to leverage. It's not the way to scale. You're actually holding yourself back. What got you there won't get you to the next level. And I realized I had gotten to the next level and I was doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I was putting this kind of effort into scaling this business, and it was harder and harder and harder. And here my line in the sand was, you know, it can be easier, right? You can do this differently. And so it took about a year to really step back and evaluate, where was I in my trajectory? And I realized that I had evolved in terms of what I wanted to teach. I consider myself a teacher, and what I wanted to coach on and who I wanted to coach. And so I really shifted the focus of the business from those people who were earlier in their business that I have big heart for and love for, to people who were already making multiple millions in business and wanted to figure out how to do business from a place of wholeness, how to have a spiritual, I shouldn't say that that's what the, I teach a spiritual journey to business success, and that you can have the level of achievement that you want, the success that you want, the money that you want, the impact that you want, but you don't have to do it in the ways that got you to where you are. And you can have more spaciousness, and you can have more ease, and you can have more peace, and you can live a fulfilled life, but it's going to require you to use a different toolkit. And that is the rub. That's the scary piece, is that what got you here feels like the only tool that you have, and letting go of it or transitioning out of it so that you use different tools is daunting for us, because we have conditioning, we have an identity that's around it. And so that's what I really work with women on now. And I do it through very practical spirituality. Like, it's very concrete, here's how kind of way of doing it. So
I
hope that gives you a bit of context. And I shared with Steph before we hit record that she asked me this question, like, tell me a little bit more about you also. And I was like, starting to share the story. And then I was like, oh, you know, I haven't shared the story on the podcast in a long time. So I thought, I'll figure out a way of sharing it so everyone can hear it. And I hope it lands with you, the audience. And, you know, how does it land for you, Steph? Do you relate to this as well?
Oh, I mean, I feel like I am a grandmaster masculine energy person. You know, I mean, I think that's how I lived. And at the same time, I also very much disagree with and do not like the badge of honor that often is stated in our society, which is work hard, play hard. I kind of don't believe in anything being hard. I'm a committed worker, but I wouldn't say I'm a hard worker.
Let's pause for 1 second there. There's a lot to unpack there. I want to know two things. You can pick whichever one you want to handle first. Tell me more about hard. I have my own opinions about it, but like, what pushes your buttons there, your disbelief? And then the second piece was around how you approach work, right? If it's not through hard, right, without the grind, what does it actually look like? Like, full truth, what does the day actually feel like and look like? Okay.
In my book, in chapter two is called Your Story Sucks, Change It. And the essence of it is we tell ourselves these unconscious stories all day long, and then we have an experience that matches the story, right?
100%.
Right. And the story comes, I believe the story is unconscious. I think that's dictating our, you know, how we move and the choices we make. And, you know, the more, and what I say all the time is the more intention we bring to the choices we make, the more power we have over the results we create. I find that a lot of people unconsciously just say, it's hard, that's hard, this was hard, I work hard, I play hard, like, this is hard. There's so much affirmation of the word hard. And I'm just like, and it feels like fingernails to a chalkboard for me. I go, is it though? Is it really hard? Or are you just saying that? You know, so I'm constantly aware of how, of the stories that people are telling themselves. And when I say that your story sucks, what I mean is, your story is sucking joy, it's sucking energy, it's sucking time, it's sucking effectiveness, it's sucking, you know, it's sucking efficiency. It's not a productive story to tell. So my relationship to the word hard is that it's a waste of energy. And I just am very clear that it's not productive. In the book, I talk about a very specific interaction I have with a client who was struggling to, you know, reach. She was struggling to do this initiative from the CEO at a level that he wanted, and she was just not getting any results. And in this particular company I was working in the company. So the company, you know, she wasn't just hiring me. I was actually in, you know, in service to the whole. So she's like, it's hard. Every other word out of her was, it's hard. And I said, when you say that, what do you mean? When I hear you say that, it sounds like that this is an excuse as to why you're not getting something done. And she said, no, she goes, when I say it's hard, I don't mind if something's hard. I like when something's hard. She was an athlete. You know, she likes this thing about hard. I go, well, what's the difference? She goes, if I'm running and I like to set myself up for a hard challenge and I like to meet it. I said, well, what's the difference here? Why are you, you know, why are you excelling in your own world, but failing in this world, if the same thing is hard? And she eventually she did not want to admit that what I was saying was making sense, but ultimately it was making sense to her. She was running a story that, like, if she's not in control of it, then it's hard. But if she chooses it, then it's a challenge that she likes.
So did she end up choosing it?
You know, she was tough. She did change her story, but she changed it on the page. And she did have some difference in her success. Ultimately, though, I think the initiative, and I don't think that the job wasn't ultimately her jam. And that made a difference too, right? But that is something to pay attention to. If what you're saying is hard, but it's not lighting you up, then that's the indication, to your point earlier.
It's so interesting because we do choose how we engage with life, right? And we can either think it's happening to us, or we can have agency. We can be having choice and saying, oh no, I chose this. I want to do this. I desire this. And that perspective really shifts how you feel about things and how you approach it. I think it's an interesting inquiry to think about. Is there any time where using the word hard makes sense? Is effective, efficient, productive, a valuable descriptor?
Yes. I mean, certainly if you're going through a terminal illness and you're dealing with real things, maybe that's hard, but I still don't like the word.
I'm going to push back on that.
I'm right? open to that.
Yeah. I mean, I get that this is why we use the word challenges, right? There are challenges in life. Listen, life is always going to happen, right? There's going to be the waves of the ocean keep coming, right? Just pause for a second and ask yourself, has there ever been a time where life didn't keep going? No, life keeps going. Sometimes you're at the top of the wave and sometimes you're at the bottom of the wave. It for all of us, there is not a single human being in this world who can say, I'm always on the top of the wave. That just doesn't exist. But we can learn how to surf, right? Like, we can learn how to have challenges and not, like, lean into the hard, right? And even if you have a terminal illness, your perspective about how you're approaching that, it can change your experience of it.
Right? 1,000%. Yeah. Can I say that this is what I would say? I would, if since we're being a little grounded woo, I would say this: the human part of us thinks things are hard. The spiritual part of us does not. That's to me, like, the simple distinction. It is the ego that tells us that things are hard. And then that somehow excuses, or it provides an experience that allows us to show up in a less way. Unless, you know, this word is challenging you to, you know, get to a certain finish line in a certain time frame. I don't know. I don't like the word. I am very adamant about my clients reframing it and choosing a different word to use.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that your client say that she liked a challenging workout? She said she liked to challenge herself.
She said, I like things to be hard. And so when they are hard, she likes the challenge. But that was not a true story. She was lying to herself. That was true if she chooses the activity. But if it's her, if it's the CEO that says, here's what I want and here's how I want it, and then she judges that as hard, then guess what she did not get?
Yeah, no, I get that. I was just going back to the inquiry around, is there ever a time where saying I choose hard makes sense? And I guess it's the connotation that when she's choosing it for herself, she's saying, I want a physical challenge, right? She's not saying, and she's doing it within a framework of, to your point, something that she feels competent in and can control versus outside of her area of specialty or control. And so that's a really interesting delineation. I think that there's, to your point around the human versus the spiritual, I think that's a really interesting thing. And would you say that our path then needs to be, as humans, to recognize that our path is to divinity, right? Our path is to be on this earth in our human form as spiritual, like close as we can to our spiritual being, therefore release as much of that hard and choose to view the world through your spiritual self. Is that the perspective that you hold?
I think that there's a fine line, right, between being Pollyanna and being in magical thinking and, you know, releasing responsibility mm-hmm. and really kind of owning it all and being intentional and conscious about those choices that one is making. So yes, I absolutely 1,000% agree that we would be, you know, we would have an experience that's more peaceful and loving and connected if we were more aligned with our divine path and mm-hmm. that purpose versus the rat race and the getting ahead or the chasing the money or whatever it is that keeps us separate from that part of us. So yes, I believe that the less attached or the more open we can be to the outcome, the more possibilities are available to us to succeed and to thrive and to love more fully and be, you know, our highest and best, which is to me what this world wants and needs. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, we're living in a really interesting time where, you know, the way I talk about it in terms of the story is I kind of say, we all, you know, we all have this proverbial table within us, right? So instead of it being our family and friends that sitting around the dining room table, I think about it like, what are the different parts of us sitting around the table? And at any given moment, what part of us is sitting at the head of the table? So we might have like happy, sad, you know, love, fear, confidence, doubt, perfectionist. We talked about that, right? Hard is sitting at the table. There's all these parts of us that are sitting at the table. And then who's in that seat of authority authoring our story? And that is what I really encourage people to get clear about and be mindful about, to observe without judgment what part of us is hijacking us at any given moment. And then when possible, make the choice to call in a higher part of us to run the show.
Yeah. Who's driving the car? Who's at the head of the table? Right.
Yep, exactly.
I love that. Let's go back to, I think this is a good time to segue back to, you said chasing money, all of that stuff. There was the high paying executive job at the Oxygen Network, the golden handcuffs, and your desire to go be a coach, follow this other world. You did it very courageously. Most people don't. You did it. So that's amazing. And then you failed at your business. And how long did you fail at business until you figured out, okay, I need to take a different tack here and do it differently?
You know, I became a coach in 07, and nobody was doing that then. And that was like, you know, you had like real OGs that were doing it, but they were, you know, they were kind of untouchable. And, mm-hmm. you know, so it was a very new thing and nobody really knew what it was. And it was a lot of explaining. But in the 3 years that I was able to stretch my severance, what happened was at age 40, I really, 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 really failed. Like I really had no money and I really had no ability to pay my rent. And I really was.
That was 3 years into the experiment?
3 years in.
Okay.
Yeah. So I, you know, I had some intervention where people were like, you gotta move. You gotta leave the city. And I was like, no. So I left and I went and lived with my parents for a few months. And it's a fun story. I ended up buying something from Tony Robbins on QVC where I had never flipped before, but I bought the program. And then I went to Unleash the Power Within probably a year or so later. That's a whole story that's the intro to my book, which am I allowed to, I won't swear, but I do write, but in the book, the intro is called FU Firewalk. So that's really the whole story. So enjoy that. It's also, it goes into.
Well,
more
now
detail.
I'm curious. I really want to know, right?
Well, I had a tendency to give my power away. Let's say it like that. And I gave my power away to what people at the event were calling Reverend Robbins. And I was like, this is not probably good. This is not a good thing. And I went by myself and I was really vulnerable and it was not good. And I walked on fire and I really thought I hurt myself and it was a terrible choice. And the part of me that was sitting at the head of the table in making that choice was total fear and complete, you know, powerlessness. And I just handed over all my agency to him and these people around him who said they weren't going to let anybody who wasn't in state walk across the fire. But alas, they did. Mm-hmm. And now I have the story. But anyway, what ended up happening was before I did that event, though, I did move home. It was a terrible time. I felt incredible shame. I turned 41 on my parents' sofa. Shame was at the head of the table for sure. And what I needed to do, the way that, you know, what I chose to do, what I felt was my only choice to do, was to go back into the entertainment industry. And I did. And it was I sold my soul. I hated every minute of it. I was fired within 18 months. And I was able to get back on my feet a little bit with that. 18 months later, I was fired. And then 2 months after that, I had my own segment on the Today Show. And so I was able to, and now let me be honest, that was extraordinary and I loved it. And and that was amazing. And it set me up for great success, though I did not actually get one client from actually being on the show. So I did have my Phil moment, right? Mm-hmm. And it was awesome. And then
Let me splice this for people. What happens is life knocks you on the head and says, you're fired, right?
Yeah.
And because you're not listening, you're not leaving on your own, right? You're miserable. Your soul is dying, all of that. You're not leaving on your own. So, you know, life knocks you on the tushy, on the head, whatever you want to call it, and fires you. And then I don't know the story on how you got on the Today Show, but even though you didn't get many clients from that, what it did was it gave you confidence and it put you in, it did put you in state. It put you in the energy state of being the woman who was a successful coach. And from that place, you were able to attract clients and do the work that would attract clients.
I'll take you back even one step though, to even say before it was, because it's always a question of like, is it the chicken or the egg? Did I get on the Today Show because, and did that bring me confidence, or did I have some confidence that got me on the Today Show? Right. And I
both.
Will say,
yeah. Both.
I will say that because when I pitched my idea, which I loved, and I was like, I felt, and I knew it and I felt it in my body. And I just was like my total self in that pitch. I was not, and I was completely detached from the outcome because this was like pie in the sky. Like this, you know,
who's going to say yes, right?
Who's going to say yes? And if they do, like, whatever, like I'll deal with that later. But within 10 minutes, they said yes. So it was like, and I think that was because I'm in the room, fun, authenticity, you know, mm-hmm. joyful and powerful was sitting at the head of the table. Mm-hmm. And that's who I, you know, my natural self showed up and it was super awesome. And mm-hmm. so, yes, I think that, look, I am dealing with, as I'm sure, maybe not you are, but like a lot of my clients are dealing with changing industries and layoffs and, you know, and in, I just had a client call me at 9 o'clock on Friday night that she was let go with like no warning and no anything and like really extraordinary shock to the system. And I have a statement for that, which is going to be my next book, which I will reveal the title if you don't mind, but the essence of it is, and again, it's another swear word, I'm sorry, but it's F you, thank you. Mm-hmm. And the essence of it is how these, you know, shocks to the system become opportunities for our next adventure, you know?
100%. You know, our greatest opportunity is within these moments that are, they feel chaotic, they feel confusing, they feel like our lowest low. And if you can say like, what if this was the best thing that ever happened to you, right? That's what I tell my clients. What if this was the best thing that ever happened to you? How would you approach this moment, right?
That's awesome.
That's like, it's like a total realignment and shift of, you know, your response to something, your reaction to something. So, yeah. Hey, Amira here. Want to know more about what keeps uber successful women from achieving everything they want in life? Find out more at theunstoppablewoman.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
I have a question for you going back before. What's your relationship with the word hard?
Oh, good question. So I think I was addicted to hard, right? I think I was, well, not think, I know. Let me be clear there. Yeah. I was absolutely 100% addicted to the word hard. You know, I grew up like many people that if you didn't struggle for something, you didn't earn it, right? You had to work hard at things to get the outcome. And that was really ingrained. You know, I was the good student, the worker bee, the like all of that. Mm-hmm. And when things came easy for me, I made them hard, right?
Fascinating.
Because of what we were talking about earlier, I had an identity that said you can only be successful if it was a struggle, if it was hard. So if I was getting things too easily, when like if my career was taking off, if my income was growing radically, I would create freaking challenges. I would create the hard. And
crazy, right?
Crazy, totally crazy. And what's even crazier, Steph, is having the awareness of that, right? Knowing that you are doing that and still like you see it, right?
Yep.
There's you know that it's that you have a propensity for this. And the next thing you know, you're looking back and you're looking down and at yourself and you're like, oh, FDF, I freaking did it again. Look at that. And you're blind to it as it's happening because, you know, these are our blind spots. And
because it feels good. Can I give
it
you a
feels, it feels, it doesn't feel good. Let's clarify. I know what you're saying, but let's clarify for the audience. It doesn't feel good when you're challenged, when you're struggling, when you're in chaos. It does not feel quote unquote good. It feels comfortable and it feels known. It feels like a known, like this is correct. This is the correct feeling to feel right now.
It's familiar.
So your body, your subconscious mind craves it, will keep bringing you back to it until you train it not to. You have to train the animal, right? Not to go there. Okay,
yeah.
Please.
I have a good example. Yeah. Sometimes in my workshops with people, I do this thing and it, you know, we're finally getting back in person, so it's more fun. But I have one person, a partner work, one person has their hand up like this, like straight up, like palm. And then the other person has their fist. And I have them push against each other for like 2 solid minutes, which is no joke. They're standing, they're pushing. There's all this anxiety, you know, like it's, if you do this, if you're pushing, you know, you can do this exercise even just by pushing a wall, like it, because that's essentially what it is. It's this incredible resistance, right? You're just pushing, pushing, pushing. I have them do it for 2 minutes. They are like, afterwards, I go, how did that feel? Oh, that was so hard. Oh, my arms hurt. Oh, that was like, you know, they're I'm sweating. You know, they have all this experience of like, you know, like they used every muscle in their body. Like this was an effort, right? And then I go, okay, the next step is person with the palm up allows person with the fist to push forward, right? So now there's ease.
No resistance.
And I said, how does that feel? They're like, that was terrible. That was totally uncomfortable. I didn't like it. It felt vulnerable, you know?
Oh, that's so fascinating. Right? I did not guess that that was going to be the answer. Interesting.
There was a lot of resistance to there not being resistance. And that is what's so fascinating about to your point, we are trained, we are familiar. We have certain, I'm sure, things that go off in our brain that, you know, say this is the addiction. The addiction is effort and push and, you know, not ease and allow. And when there's ease and allow, that feels like ungrounded in some way. There's nothing, we're not resisting.
It doesn't feel like yourself anymore.
Correct. Right.
Yeah.
And that's the practice and the transformation that you're saying is what we get to do.
100%. And what I have noticed with this, and I don't know if you have the same experience, is that, you know, there's that adage, new level, same devil, right? Like you get to the next level, your circumstances change. You might be making multiple millions. You might be leading a different kind of team, whatever, getting to do the work that you want to do something's changed. And at least for me, I'm like cruising along. This feels great. I like this. Look at me. I'm all that and more. Flip my hair back. This is great. Right. And then I will find that same pattern come up again. Now, the difference is I'm aware, more aware of this, and I catch it earlier. But I don't know that the going back to that point, that for me, addiction to struggle, addiction to hard, is ever going to like miraculously go away to the point where it will never be the thing that challenges me to up level, to become more aware, right? Like it's the thing that brings what, oh, I love this. I've never said it like this before. It's the thing that gives me, that triggers me into the next level of awareness. It's or said differently, it's my trigger for when I am going unaware, when I'm losing my awareness of self, right? My connection to self.
When things are harder, you have that.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, really, really transparently, we just did this marketing initiative that came to me as a download. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. Okay, team, let's do this, right? I love this. I'm all about it. And then it became this, you know, like a tumbleweed. It just kept like having things attached to it.
Snowball effect.
It snowballed, right? And it became hard. Mm. And weeks pass, like 3 weeks pass before I recognized, maybe 5 weeks passed.
Wow.
You know, because it was like, you know, boiling the frog, right? Like you're in it and you're like, oh yeah, well, this is just the next thing I need to do. Okay, I can do that. That's fine. No big deal. And then I woke up, I'm like, this is not fun. And this is a freaking grind. I'm not, what happened? What the hell just happened? And by the by, not an effective marketing campaign because it lost the flow of my energy. It lost the connectedness to my truth in this creation of the complication. And so what did I do? I just was like, okay, we're going to scale this all back. Not doing that. You know?
Creation of the complication. I love it. That's
right.
Yeah.
And, but you know, that's, I would say that was, you know, a long time for me to not be aware. Other things happen in an instant. I'm like, oh, we're not going there. Right. Yeah. But it was a great wake up call for me. And I think that if someone is able to identify for themselves, because it's not just hard, that's not the only story that's out there. There's stories of victim, there's stories of not enoughness, there's stories, I call these core wounds, right? Mm-hmm. Like I had a core wound of unlovability, right? Which I talk about on my website, on the homepage. I tell a little story about that. And I have this download on how to recognize your core wounds and like how to work through them. Because these core wounds can keep you in the dark about how you keep playing out your patterns. And even though I shared an example where I'm not super proud of, you know, it was 5 weeks versus 20 minutes of unawareness, it still wasn't 3 years. It still wasn't, you know, a huge amount of time before I woke up to this.
I appreciate you sharing that. I think it's like, it's so important to share our humanity and our vulnerability and the fact that we're all learning. Like if we're not learning and growing, then there's no need to be here anymore. Right. So this is all part of it. So I'm grateful that you shared that.
Thank you. Okay. Well, we could keep talking for a lot longer, but we have reached a good stopping point here. But before I kind of wrap up the episode and ask my final questions, because I do have a few more questions for you, where can people find you? How can they purchase your book? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
So my website is the best place to get in touch with me. And it's my name, which is spelled S-T-E-F like Frank, Z-I-E-V, which is pronounced Ziv like live. And also my book is on Amazon and it's anywhere you get books online. And if you, though, I do offer a free bonus. If you want to just go on my website to get it, it'll still bring you to Amazon, but then just come back and put in a receipt number and you'll get a free chapter and also I did a Q&A when it first came out, which is almost a year ago today.
Congratulations.
That would be awesome. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. And we'll put that link in the show notes for anyone who missed that. You can just go into the show notes, click it, and find her book and find her website and all that good stuff. So that's there for you. Okay. So one of the things that we haven't spoken about much in this episode is the exquisite life. So I have this really strong stance that especially for women who are achievers, who are the unstoppable ones, who have this incredible drive and this real sense that they're here to do things in this world, that we can get caught up in the doing. Nothing against the doing. I am a committed achiever. Okay. It's never gonna go away, but that there's more to life than just doing that. And we need to find our path to the exquisite life. This is what I am teaching people to really access, is how do you hold yourself as an achiever and have an exquisite life? So when you hear me speak about it that way, how would you approach having an exquisite life? Like, what comes to you as a tip or a perspective that you think would help yourself and others kind of lock into living exquisitely?
I love that word. I never use that word. It's a really beautiful word. It feels very powerful to me.
Let me speak to that for a moment.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this about? And it wasn't like live your best life, right? It was like, it's like if divinity was moving through you all day long, if you were filled with spirit, with life force, with love, right? If you were living that way, your life would feel exquisite. It would feel just divine. And when I first approached it, I kind of had a different sense to it. I was like, well, what are the, you know, my life is pretty darn good right now. Like on paper, it's pretty darn good. Like I call this the on paper problem, right? Like on paper looks pretty good. I'm making good money. My family's great. I've got, you know, a nice house, whatever your checkpoints are. My health is pretty good. But this one thing, 4 out of 5, 4 things are great. This fifth thing, man, I have always been challenged by that, right? Like, let's solve that, because when we unlock that, then everything else unlocks as well. Okay, that's the thing that's like holding you back. And that's how I first was looking at the exquisite life, because that was really my story. I had this core wound of unlovability, and when I unlocked that, and shifted that radically, everything else like unlocked for me, including the shifts in my business and things like that, and wealth and all that. So, but then as I've lived with this idea of like unlocking the exquisite life, it has come to feel that the way I described it initially, like if life force was running through you all the time, what would that look like? How could you actually run your business from that place? Right? And most people want to be able to do that, but they can't. They're completely locked into a different energy state than feeling exquisite all day long. So anyways, that's a little bit of the origin story there.
What came up for me as you were talking, and what I think I would identify as the exquisite life, is not making it all about oneself, right? It's like, I feel what came up for me is I wake up in the morning and I kind of, my little prayer is, you know, where do you want me? You know, universe, show me the way. And when I am in that kind of surrender, which is not to say I'm not also doing, I'm a doer. Mm-hmm. I am a fellow doer for sure. But I also really value space. And I feel like the exquisite life is to be, you know, in the harmony of the space, the flow, the action, and knowing kind of like when to, and to be in service, to be used. And that is not to be abused, and that is not to be taken advantage of, and that is not to be disrespected by self or others. But there is a, you know, I think that so often it's like we're waiting for that resistance, as I shared before, and And if we allow, then when I'm in the space of allowing and trusting, I am in a very different flow and things start to move than when I am scared and worried and anxious. And that is not an exquisite life.
I got all sorts of yeses from that. Like from the moment you started talking about like surrender, where do you need me today? Like just point me in the direction is so, so key. And then also this distinction, this is something that is so huge. Like if you are in trust and knowing, if you can like lean into that and let go of the worry, which is it's a kind of untrust, like this idea that you have to manipulate the world to control the world in order to get what you want. And it's very seductive because most of us have been trained that way. But if you can instead reverse it and come from a place of, okay, I trust everything's going to work out. Show me how to serve today. It does work out.
One of the things I also say to my clients a lot is, you know, we're always making up a story. So why not make up a good story, right? It's like worry is as much of a prayer as is trust and surrender and abundance and joy and show me the way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, both is the way I've heard it said and how I teach it is like we can have faith in a positive unknown in the future, or we can have faith in a negative unknown in the future. And worry is just negative faith, right? Yep. It's just believing in something that hasn't yet happened that is negative. And why not flip that around? So
that's right.
Okay. Well, this has been so much fun, Steph. Thank you so much for joining us. I know everyone is going to eat this episode up. Love it so much. And please let us know in the comments, wherever you are listening, like what landed for you, which tidbit, which golden nugget from what Steph shared really like open something for you. I would love to hear. I read all the comments. So please comment. And if you're moved, we would love you to write a review, give a 5-star rating to this podcast. It will really, and subscribe. Subscribing is probably the most important thing that you could do. All of it helps. But if you're liking these conversations and you'd like to give back, it would make a world of difference for you to do those things. Share it, comment, like, subscribe, because it helps the podcast get more visibility. Even though we are a top 2% podcast, we still need your help on that. So thank you so much for helping us out there, and stay tuned for our next episode. I'm Amira Alvarez. I'm the founder and CEO of The Unstoppable Woman. And here's to your exquisite life. Have a great day. Bye. Most ambitious women I work with already have good lives, possibly even great. But there's often this one area that is fine as is, but not yet exquisite. And yet, when we unlock that one area, they access a whole new level. I want to personally invite you to book a complimentary call with me and discover what that unlock could do for you. These calls are for women who have done at least $1 million or more in their business or executive career and are ready for an exquisite life inside and out. You can book our conversation at theunstoppablewoman.com/connect.